online. Each Sunday night, 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio. To the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. And good evening, one and all, and welcome to Maine Outdoors, Maine's most enduring outdoor talk radio program. We've been around longer than Norm Plord. I mean, 20 some years.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Old as dirt.
Hey, it's nice to have you aboard tonight. And again, we're a talk radio show, and we welcome your participation tonight. We have some interesting guests who we'll introduce in just a moment. If you'd like to call us and be on the program tonight, the magic number to call is
1-800-966-1039. And even if you're local, you have to dial a whole number.
You betcha. So anyway, jot that number down and be prepared to, if you have questions or comments for our guest tonight, we welcome you to weigh in. I'll introduce the guest in just a second. First, the crew that make this show possible every week, week after week. Tonight, we are honored to have behind the gauges and the toggle switches in there and the behind the bulletproof glass, the man, the chili king of a Grand Lake stream, Mr. Norm Barley. Norm Plord.
Good evening, and how are you doing? I almost missed the cue tonight to get this thing up and running.
You did, really? I can't believe that.
Jeez, it would have been dead air.
Yeah, we don't want that.
No.
And with Norm, to his right, is the Raspberry Tycoon, former helicopter pilot extraordinaire, Mr. Scotty Bates.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and good evening, everybody out there. And boy, fall is here.
Isn't it? You know, do you folks think the foliage is a little brighter this year than some other years, or is it just my age that's doing that to me?
I've seen better years, but it's good.
It's pretty good.
Oh, man.
We were up north last week, and it was pretty good up there, and it's probably a little better down here now.
Yeah, I think it's spectacular. Just beautiful, yeah.
It's a great time of the year.
Yeah. Do you know what an ice cream cone and a foliage have in common?
Is this for real?
Yeah.
How about the different colors? The different
colors?
Yeah.
Yeah, or that, or it gets over too soon.
That's right. Whichever settles best.
All right.
Yeah. Not any more beautiful.
Anyway.
Flavors, yeah, all now, those different
now,
flavors.
Yeah, yeah. Folks, yeah. Don't at home, don't be put off by all this silliness, because we do have a good show lined up. We have some great guests who I'll introduce right now. This gent used to be the director of the Allagash Waterway. He's an outdoor man through and through. He's been in the outdoors all his life, and he's written some wonderful books, and we're going to talk about some of those books tonight. We'd like to welcome Tim Caverly.
Thank you for having us.
Nice to have you here, Tim. And with Tim, we also have his wife, Susan, who's with us on mic number 4. She's said she's not sure she wants to talk that much, but I know before the show's over, she'll be joining us. I just can just tell. Anyways, nice to have you folks here, and we'll be talking to them in just a minute. And again, Tim, what used to be the Allagash director, we'll find out a little more about him in just a few minutes, so you stand by for that. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. I just want to remind you again that we're still looking for some part-time salespeople. If you're interested in getting into advertising sales for the largest outdoor publication in New England, we will train you and give generous commissions. If you're interested, you can call. Give me a call. Call me anytime at 745-3133, or you can call my partner, Vic Morin, at 732-4880 during the week. Just a couple of quick things here. Chronic wasting disease has been in the news. You may have seen it recently in the BDN and some other papers and on TV. CWD is the acronym, and it's well-known out west, not so well-known around here, but it is a neurological disorder that can really raise havoc with cervids. Now, Norm, you know what a cervid is, right? You know, a cloven-hoofed game critter, like a deer, moose, elk, caribou, that sort of thing.
Take your word for it.
Yeah, anyway. That's true. Anyway, chronic wasting disease, unfortunately, has been discovered in bordering Quebec, which is a real worry for the biologists in the state of Maine. If that ever got into our white-tailed deer herd in Maine, it could raise havoc. Anyway, we have a fellow who's very knowledgeable in this area, Dr. Arthur Allen, who will be talking to it during the 7:30 break, and he might be able to explain that a little better than I did. I'm sure he can do a much better job. So we'll be talking to him, and we'll be taking your questions. Right now, though, it's time for Bob's favorite music. And all you have to do, Norm, is push that little button on the left right there, the one just to the left of the right one.
For some reason, it's not playing.
Okay.
Not playing.
Let's try on this one.
Try that one.
Oh. There it is. Yeah. Yeah.
My rock.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What's going on, Bobby, in the fishing world?
Well, there's quite a lot going on, and it's coming to a close, actually.
It is.
There's only a few more days, you might say, in some places.
You bet.
And actually, I've written down a couple, three places that still open. And that, of course, is my friends I usually call, you know, to get a lot of information. And they've all gone bow hunting, like you. Did you get it? Have you been bow hunting yet?
Did I introduce you tonight?
No, you didn't.
Dagnabbit. What's going on with me? It must be an age thing. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry about it.
And after you gave me all those apples, I introduced the engineers and forgot the co-host, Bob Lehman.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sorry I forgot.
That's hard. Don't worry about it.
I'm just so ashamed of myself.
Anyway, have you been bow hunting?
I like your hat, too.
Hey, you know, the Red Sox, we hate to, you know, digress.
I know.
But you can tape our show, or you can tape the Red Sox, so you won't miss either one.
That's right.
And that's good advice, isn't it?
You bet. And I hope they do better tonight than they did last night.
Yeah, oh, well, you bet. Yeah. That's right.
Have I been bow hunting? Yes, I have.
You have?
Three times. I've been sitting in a little ground blind in a secret hot spot I have.
Uh-huh.
And I got some deer on my trail camera, but they haven't been around when I'm there, so I'm not sure. But I'll keep trying.
You get in there early in the morning, late a day, or what?
No, late in the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
Before dark, yeah.
Before dark. That's the spot. Not too far from home?
We don't talk about it.
You know, no, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, not too far from
Okay,
where
back to fishing.
Okay.
Okay. GLS, as you know, that's Grand Lake Stream,
right,
is open till the 20th of this month. So you have a few more days, and I might sneak down there another day or two and have a report next week, but we'll see.
Okay.
And my wife, Alice, won't let me go alone anymore, so if I don't find somebody to go with, I probably won't go. You want to go? Probably not.
Well,
too busy.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. I talk about it.
All right. Even for a day or maybe a couple.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about it.
With the temperature of the water down there is, when I was there in September, the temperature of the water was like 65.
Yeah.
And it was way too warm. And, of course, all the goings on, as you know, down there. Maybe we could have somebody call us in and bring us up to date and what's going on down there. I know the water temperature has gone down to somewhere around 55, which is great for salmon.
You know, Greg Burr is going to be with us next week. He's bringing Dale Wheaton up to talk about Dale's new book.
Yeah, well, he can certainly bring us up to date.
I bet he can, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, you got the East Outlet, and that's open forever, as you know. You can go up there. Yep. Of course, you'll have guides that'll freeze up a little later.
Yes, you will.
So, and all of your warm water, well, not all, most all your warm water ponds contain small, you know, pickerel, perch, and so on, bass, and they're still open, and you can fish them right up until ice, and then you can ice fish. So there's plenty of fishing going on for that.
All right.
So as I said, Roach River. I wanted to mention Roach River because Roach River was open in September, good for fishing.
Yep.
Closes September 30, and my son goes up there a couple times a year in September, and he goes in September because his fishing is good. But the biologists put their wares out. Fike nets and trap nets off the mouth this year, and it kind of slowed up the fishing in the river for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it kind of hampered what was going on up in the rivers. But and then the last 2 weeks, the disabled veterans moved in, which was great for them. Really was.
Yeah.
So it was a little crowded, but it was, no kid, it was really a good thing.
Yeah, good.
So that's my report for this week. I'll have a bigger one for you next week.
All right.
Hopefully.
Okay, great report. We appreciate
that.
Again, if you just joined us, 1-800-966-1039 is the statewide toll-free number. And our guests tonight are Tim Caverly and his wife, Susan. We'll be talking to them about their new book. And right now, though, we have a trivia question, which Tim Caverly has agreed to read. He's going to read you this question, which is right there, Tim, about a third of the way down. And we want, if you get the right answer to Tim's question, Bob Lehman has generously agreed to send you one of his very coveted hand-tied flies, if you can answer this question.
What does the law say about archers wearing sidearms.
Okay, one more time, Tim.
What does the law say about archers wearing sidearms?
All right, you guys ponder that. You gals ponder that. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our guest Tim Caverly is waiting for you to answer his question. He wants to know what the law says about archers wearing sidearms. And good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Tim Caverly. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Oh, good. Thank you. How about yourself?
Very good. Very good. The law says you can carry a sidearm. You just can't dispatch deer with it.
That's correct. Very good.
All right. Yeah.
All right,
I needed another one of them flies. You know, I won one last Christmas, and I left it at the bottom of a brook out here somewhere.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bob is going to tie you another one, hand-tied, custom, just tied just for you, all right?
Nice. We love those.
Okay. What's your first name, sir?
Corey.
Corey. Where are you calling from, Corey?
Parkman.
Parkman, way up there in Parkman. Mm. Has the foliage gone by up in Parkman, or is it still pretty nice up there?
It's falling at a pretty good clip.
Is it? Yeah. All right. Well, Corey, congratulations to you. Again, Bob will make sure you get the fly mailed to you, and if you'll stay on the line, Scotty Bates will get your mailing address, okay?
Thanks. You guys take care. Have a good season.
Okay, yeah, you too. Corey. Thanks for the call. Yep. Bye-bye. All right. That was the correct answer. You can wear a sidearm if you're a bow hunter, but you can't dispatch a wounded animal with that sidearm.
A wounded animal? Now, supposing a trapper.
A trapper can call a coyote. Oh yeah, a trapper can. Sure.
He can dispatch you with a carrier 22 or something
like that. Yeah, just for bow hunters.
Just bow hunters.
Yeah. Make it fair, you know.
Well, I was going to say we've been doing that for years, so I was wondering if we were legal or not.
Oh yeah, perfectly legal. Right. Okay, let's get out of business here. Again, welcome, folks. Nice to have you here, Tim. Just for those of you who may not know. Tim was a Allagash director of the waterway there from 1981 to 89. He and his wife both are graduates of the University of Maine. They were trained to be teachers, and they both taught in the public school system when Tim was the director of the Allagash waterway. And the main reason we've invited Tim tonight is he's written a lot of interesting books. And I think you've done, eight books, Tim, right?
Up to nine and a half.
Nine and a half.
Nine and a half.
So you're working on one now.
Well, we took a story out of the last book we've written and made it available for schools.
Oh, okay. That's great. And there's a certain genre that you concentrate on. Tell our listeners about that and how you began to write these books for young folks.
Well, I was a park ranger for 32 years in the Four Corners of Maine. And when I was supervisor of the Allagash, I would write stories for my daughter based on experiences that we'd had or wildlife antics that we'd seen. And so I wrote a story for her. And after my retirement, I went to work in the Millinocket school system. And there were kids there that didn't want to read or go outside. So I thought if I could get one of the stories illustrated and take it into the classroom, maybe it would encourage them to want to read more and learn more about our natural world. And so I did that. And the illustrations by my partner, Frank Manzo, came out so well, he suggested that we publish it. And so when I had the finished copy, I took it into the classroom and read it. And immediately the kid said, "Gee, Mr. Caverly, do you have any more stories?" The next story was a ghost story, the Allagash Haunting, and that's been made into a stage play and done as a radio broadcast.
No kidding. Wow. What's that about? I haven't read it. What's that about?
This is my granddaughter is in that book. When she's 10, she's actually 9 and just found out she's in the story a few months ago.
Yeah.
She takes her first trip down the Allagash, and when she gets to Churchill Dam, she meets a French-Canadian lumberjack ghost, and he takes her back in time to a 1925 lumberjack dance at the old boarding house, which is still at Churchill Dam.
Oh, that is great. I get goosebumps. I haven't read that, but I like the plot. That's great. And we have a caller standing by. All right, I was going to find out a little more about your background. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Tim and Susan Caverly. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a question that I would need an answer for, if you can do. I have a friend that's a very avid hunter up here in the Lincoln Lee area, and he told me today that he's not hunting because there's no hunting allowed in Maine on Sundays, and I am just a summertime guy up here. I live in southern Arizona, so I don't have a lot of knowledge about what goes on up here in the hunting season, but why is it that people can't hunt on Sundays? I mean, people that work all week long
like to go out and hunt on the weekend. Yeah. What is it with that?
All right. Have you got 5 or 6 hours? We could.
Well,
Maine, that has been a very controversial topic, sir, for many, many years, as far back as I can remember. Other people have asked the same question. There have been attempts to try to make it legal to hunt Sunday hunt in Maine. It never seems to quite get through. There's always different groups that oppose it. There was discussion about maybe allowing it just in the big North Woods. That never went through. And I think somewhere along the way, everybody just sort of gave up and said, this ain't never going to happen, so let's stop messing with it. I'm an avid hunter, and I don't have a problem with the idea that I can't hunt on Sunday. It's a nice time around deer camp. It's when people show up. It's when they get the wood cut and fix the roof and stuff like that. I don't have a problem with it. But somebody who maybe works hard all week, I can understand maybe them being a little bit concerned that they can't hunt on Sunday. But it's been a real controversial issue.
I just thought that it might be a good subject for you to talk about because it was unknown to me, and I thought that because Maine is such a avid outdoor state, I mean, you can go fishing. Why can't you go hunting?
Yeah,
you know, it's just,
well, I'm sure it has a Judeo-Christian base. I would think where for those folks who want to honor the Sabbath and so forth, it's a time of rest, and I think that's probably what it harkens back to. Wouldn't you say, Norm?
That's what I would.
Yeah,
I would.
Yeah,
you know, definitely.
And when they tried to. They came close to passing it back here 10 years or so ago, and I guess it was the horse people, the equestrians, who came out of the woodwork and said, look, I have 100 acres, and I allow people to hunt it, but if you pass this law, I'm going to close my land. And there were a lot of folks in Maine, horse people, who said the same, and it kind of discouraged anybody from wanting to push it further. So,
well, maybe just a thought about the North Woods. I mean, there's so much territory up here that is not owned by the general public,
yeah,
that you
yeah.
can get out and have
yeah.
a good time in.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that was my question.
Yeah, good question. I always thought that was kind of a good compromise, was to allow Sunday hunting up, you know, north of, I don't know, no, Millinocket right. or something, yeah. Anyway, welcome right. to Maine. I've been to Arizona. You got a nice state there.
Well, I'm looking forward to going back this week just to get away from the snow.
I bet you are. Good for you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Do you have room for me to park my camper out there this winter?
Well, no.
Okay. No.
All right. Well, that was a rebuff. Anyway, appreciate it. You have a safe trip back to Arizona.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay. So anyway, we sort of digressed there, but we got to take the calls, Tim. So you got interested in this, and you have a thing called a literacy project. So you were motivated to try to get youngsters interested in reading again. That's a great, great motivation.
Absolutely, and it's grown into something we call New England Reads because we're reaching throughout New England now. In fact, in the last 8 years, Sue and I have given programs to 8,000 students from here to Essex Junction, Vermont.
Have you really?
And the kids are really great. In fact, we spoke at two young authors' camps last summer.
Did you, yeah?
At Arno and Augusta to talk about writing and creative process. I'd like to give my website so folks want to check out either our books and our schedule of appearances,
sure.
which is allagashtales.com. And Tails is spelled T-A-I-L-S because some of my characters are animals. AllagashTales.com.
Okay. AllagashTales.com. All right. Great. Well, it's wonderful that you're doing that. Let me ask you this. I think one of the obvious reasons that youngsters aren't reading anymore is the iPhones and all the electronic gadgetry, right?
Well, there's so much outdoors that once you experience it, you remember it forever. And I knew that was big in people's hearts when I was a park ranger, but now that we're out and about and working Freiburg Fair and all these craft shows and speaking at libraries, the experience is bigger than I ever imagined. And
what do you mean by that?
By the people that canoe the Allagash, the ones that get the big deer that they've always tried to, or see a bobcat out in the middle of the Maine woods. You can't get that on electronic equipment.
You can't.
You can't, not that special feeling right in front of you.
Yeah. So you folks travel around. Susan, you travel with Tim to go to these classrooms?
Yes.
You do that? I got a word out of it.
Yeah.
That's great. Anyway, so we're going to talk about we want to talk about your book, and we're going to take a break here in just a second probably. I don't want to get started and have you interrupted by the music. At 7:30, again, we're going to have a short conversation with Dr. Arthur Allen, who's going to explain what chronic wasting disease is. Been in the news lately, and we want to give him a chance to talk about that. So the book that you have here, and then you've done, you said 8.5 books?
It's 9.5 books, Alex. I can explain that.
Okay. Go ahead and explain it, and if we get interrupted by the break music, we'll catch up with you afterward. Go
ahead. We have a brand-new book, which is about a week and a half old, called 'Tis the Season. It has 6 short stories about Christmas throughout Maine based on experiences that my wife and I have had with our families. And we've taken one of the stories, Christmas in Cornville, and broke that out and worked with the 2 classes in the Canaan school system to create a story for the Maine Studies Unit. And that Christmas in Cornville, and we'll take you right back to 1953.
All right. We're going to take a short break. You stay with us. We'll be right back with more right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and our studio guests tonight, again, are Tim and Susan Caverly, and they have a great new book out called 'Tis the Season on in Maine. And right now, though, we're going to hook up with Dr. Arthur Allen. Are you there, sir?
Yes, go ahead, Brian.
Hi, Arthur. How are you tonight?
Hey, not bad at all, really.
Good to have you with us. You might want to turn your radio down just a little bit there. I think we're getting a little echo.
Okay, I see what you mean now.
Okay.
Good to have you with us. You might want to turn your radio down.
Okay. Yeah.
I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a delay system here, so it tends to echo if you have your radio on. Arthur, you're a former retired wildlife professor, and where did you teach last? Bob and I were talking about that. He wasn't sure.
Well, I started at the University of Maine with some very, very fine people, and then went to Michigan State to get my doctorate. Taught a while in California, Oklahoma, and 31 years in Louisiana, and the last place was at Northwestern State in Louisiana.
All right, so you've...
I handled the wildlife program as well as the botanical program.
Yeah. So I would say, wouldn't you say he's got pretty good credentials, Bob Lehman?
You might say that,
yeah.
Yes.
Arthur, we wanted to focus tonight here for just a few minutes. I know that chronic wasting disease has been in the news lately, and being a person who hunts out west, I'm familiar with it because it's been a constant problem out there. And I was kind of surprised to read in the Bangor Daily recently that they found, I guess, a captive deer in neighboring Quebec that had this CWD. Can you tell us what is it, and we have reason to be concerned, I would gather, huh?
Okay, right now, between what John Holyoke had in the Bangor Daily News and George Smith has a publication out, too, on the website, and there are a couple of people, Nate Bieber at the Maine Department Inland Fishery and Wildlife, along with Judy Camuso, who is the director in the Wildlife Division. And for the public, you can get into Wikipedia, and you'll find a good deal of research information. Right now, there are about 29 research publications. Chronic wasting disease is a highly transmissible, spongiform, encephalopathy in the deer family. Now, it's located in about 23 states and in 3 Canadian provinces. If you want to check on websites, here come to the North American Chronic Wasting Disease Regulation and the North American Chronic Wasting Disease Alliance.
Now, I read somewhere, Arthur, that it's okay to eat wild meat even if the animal was infected because it's in the bone marrow and the brain matter. Is that true or is that myth?
Here's the problem. After being recognized in 1967 in Colorado in the mule deer, right now parts of the deer that come from an infected animal can not only be found in the brain and the spinal column, but it's in the saliva, it's in the spleen, it could be in the testes, reproductive areas as well, and gut piles that are left out in the open from infected deer we're getting increasingly alarmed about that for the hunters, because crow especially have now been implicated visiting those gut piles, and they take it to their roost, and below the roost all those fecal pellets build up, and that's where the infected protein called prion is lodged, and it goes down into the soil and stays for many, many years, apparently, and can come to the surface where animals, ungulates, are in habitat.
I see.
So it's a real problem of what can be done.
Yeah.
There's an emergency proclamation from the state now, and you'll find that you can't move deer carcasses through the state of Maine or other states except New Hampshire, and also out from the Canadian provinces. For a while, we permitted the Canadian people to move their deer carcasses through Maine. That has also been eliminated.
Yeah, that's been banned.
Too risky.
Yeah. The commissioner the commissioner was quoted as saying that this chronic wasting disease is the most serious threat facing our deer and moose populations in modern times. Would you agree?
That is true.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I've worked with prions before in one of my research laboratories, and we were dealing with human brains that were preserved for about 40 years, showing our students. And we had to wear gloves when we handled those, take them out to show parts of the brain. And the one report indicated even after being preserved many years in laboratories, the prion can be activated. So this is a real-time bomb.
Yeah. What happens to a critter infected with this CWD? How do you know? They become
One, hunters need to be aware of the following symptoms. Look for emaciated deer,
right.
Ribs showing, head down,
yeah.
And heavy salivation. And for people in the backyard with the bird feeders, there's something else that I can indicate. Don't put out any more corn, what have you. And for those that do feed deer all along, especially in the western mountain and a roostic area especially, this is something to reconsider very carefully under this kind of pressure, because the more dense that these animals come into on that habitat, why, one only takes one, and the whole herd that's coming into feeding stations can be infected.
That must explain why, from my reading, that animals in captivity or deer in captivity seem to be more prone to this than animals that are out in the wild, right?
Absolutely. They're locked up into,
yeah.
You know, certain close quarters, yeah. And the urine and fecal pellets can carry the infected prion or protein, and that can reinfect other animals like wildfire.
Wow.
So that's another area that we're looking into,
yep.
In deer farms, elk farms. Also, it has a lot to do with the moose population also, as you know.
Yeah, wow. So this is something to be watched closely and to be very conscious about, right?
Yeah, there's a list out now, and John Holyoke has published it in the paper. Be very much aware of emaciated animals, and also animals that are heavily salivating. That's very important. And there's a list of things that you can push through if you want to. Dried antlers is one of them. Go ahead.
Is this disease limited to just, I call them cervids, you call them ungulates, but is it limited just to deer, moose, and elk and so forth in Maine?
Well, we've got a problem there, because we've got two reports from Norway and one report from Finland. So it's in Europe, and they're watching it very carefully. They're particularly interested in protecting their cattle, goat, and sheep. Now, there's only one paper that I've found so far indicating that there is a possibility of getting out of the cervid group into the other ruminoid animals, such as cattle, sheep, and goats.
Okay.
So people in that category with those types of animals should also be aware of what CWD can really come through their property.
Yeah. So it's a very serious issue, obviously. Wow.
I agree.
Yeah. Would you eat an animal that was infected with this disease?
Because of incomplete information at this point, I probably would not.
Probably would not, yeah.
No, yeah. I would not. But yeah. Others, it's in the red, not in the red meat as such, it may be okay.
Yeah.
I wish we had a good test because we don't have a cure and there's no such thing as a vaccination yet.
Yeah, wow. All right, we appreciate you taking your time, Arthur. And Bob wanted to make sure you knew that you can feel free to go down and pick apples off his tree.
Yes, and if you need any more tomatoes, Arthur, tell Bonnie to come on down.
He's awful stingy about those apples.
Oh, isn't he? Yeah, yeah, he sure is. Boy, I had a hard time to get six of them out of
him. Yeah, and he only took about six bushels.
Oh, okay.
All right. Nice to talk to you, Arthur.
Helps.
We'll have you on the radio here in the studio one of these days.
All right. Now.
Take
bye-bye.
Care now. Thank
yep.
you, sir.
Have a nice night.
Yep, bye-bye. All right, that was Dr. Arthur Allen, who lives a neighbor of Bob's over there on, is it okay to say where you live?
Allen Adale in Brewer.
Allen Adale over there in Brewer.
So?
That's with hyphens, too. Allen hyphen
You know
Adale.
Who Allen Adale was?
Robin Hood.
He was Robin Hood's buddy, that's right.
I know more than I thought.
Really.
I know this stuff. Hey, I'm no dummy. All right.
I know.
Okay, let's get back to our guest now. Again, we were talking with you. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, I haven't had a chance to read your book thoroughly, but I did skim it a little bit before the program. Some of us have better powers of recollection than others, particularly when it comes to our childhood. I could never write a book about my childhood, but you have done so, and done so with a great comprehensive way. Did you have to stop and think about what it was like back then, or is it all right on the top of your head?
Generally, 2:45 in the morning is what it comes to me.
Is it really?
Yeah. And it has stayed with me pretty well, especially the Cornville Christmas, because it was so strong in my mind at that time.
Yeah.
And you just don't have to make anything up, because there's enough real-life stuff that happens, and that's what we try to talk about.
Yeah. Susan, do you help Tim write these books, or does he do it all on his own?
He does the majority of his own.
You don't do some of the editing?
I do some of the editing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you ever critique him and tell him you should change this or change? My wife looks at all my stuff, you know, with a fine-tooth comb and a red pen. She marks
You're
it
You're supposed to be the editor.
No, she oh, no, she's the editor. I'm just the editor. She's the editor.
The editor.
You don't edit Tim's material?
When he wrote the story about him and I at college,
yeah,
I asked him to change some stuff.
Yeah, can you tell us what?
No.
I was afraid of that. Okay. We have a caller standing by who may have a question. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Tim and Susan Caverly. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was listening to your program about the involvement of the youth in the outdoor activities.
Right.
And currently I live in Massachusetts, but I have half my time divided up here in Northeast Cary, up in northern end of Moosehead Lake. And back in Mass, we have a little program, an event. It's called the Big Mull, and that stands for Mass Outdoor Expo.
Right.
And it's one day out in September. And it's a free event, and we have families and kids come down, and we have them stock fish, and then we have them catch them, and we shoot trap and 22s and do archery and birds of prey and many other things related to the outdoors. And I'm just asking if there's such a thing, is there a like event in that in Maine?
Good question. Do you know, Tim?
Of course, there are a lot of youth organizations in Maine. You got the Green Point Camp down in Washington County,
right.
Bryant Pond. There are a lot. I haven't heard one similar to what he talked about. But there's a lot of opportunities with the Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. If you do some research, there's a lot of opportunities.
You bet.
Right. Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah.
And this is maybe for kids and families that aren't involved with those kind of organizations.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot in schools. In fact, I'm going to be in Massachusetts in February at a camping show. Okay. And so we're doing a lot with schools on what we can do individually to encourage kids to get outside and learn about the natural world. And if you want to check out our website or come by the show in Springfield, I'd be happy to talk with you about it.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Now, I have a question for you. Did you have a frost up at Northeast Cary this morning?
Yeah, we did. It was 30 degrees.
Oh, was it? How about your foliage? Pretty much gone by?
It's on its way out.
Yeah.
Down. It still looks good, but it's on its way out.
Downhill from now, yeah. Okay, we appreciate your input. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Yep. We have another caller standing by?
Yes, we do.
Okay, good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Tim and Susan Caverly. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Brian Smith. How are you, Tim and Sue?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
Good. I'm just calling to say how much I miss those long, cold days in the duck blind on Cobbs Cook and even colder days on Chamberlain Lake.
I don't believe I ever saw you miss a shot of a whistler coming into the decoys.
That's because I couldn't see it because of the sea smoke.
We're pretty cold days.
Yes, they were. Hey, I'm just wondering if you've taken advantage of now we have a 2 black duck limit again.
I haven't. I haven't duck hunted much in the last few years. We're so busy on the road going from place to place that I haven't been to duck camp now for about 4 years, but that's in my bucket list to get back into.
Well, good. Yeah. Stuff gets in the way.
That does. Yes.
Yeah. Gets in the way.
You bet.
Exactly.
So you can keep two blacks this year, right? You can keep two black ducks this year?
Yeah, they started last year, and you can this year. Yeah. I haven't taken advantage of it even last year, but
yeah.
I kind of like that 10 goose limit in September when it's warm.
Well, appreciate the call, Brian.
All right, say hi to Sue.
Thank you, sir.
Good to talk with you.
Yep. Bye bye. All right, we're going to probably do a little commercial break here, Norm. Right before we run out of time. Bob Lehman wants to sell a couple of appliances here. Go ahead, Bob.
How could you not go into General Appliance in Brewer? That's the place to go for all of the appliance needs, whether they are gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Oh, thank you, Norm. Appreciate that.
Oh, you guys.
It's too bad Jim wasn't here tonight.
Oh, I think those guys.
I miss Jim. He always says that, you know, Jimmy.
They don't get paid extra for that either.
If you're listening, Jimmy, we're thinking of you, okay?
That's icing on the cake.
Okay, back to the ad here. And General Appliance is at 91 Center Street in Brewer, and they're the non-electric connection and a family-owned business since the 1920s. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And yep. Al Elkins, the guy to see over there, and he knows his stuff.
He sure does. And sure. It's easy to get to over there because you just take the old Bangor Brewer Bridge, take a right at the light when you get into Brewer, take a left and you're on Center Street, and they got practically the whole block there on the right. And they also have electric appliances, and they also have compost toilets.
Yes, they do.
And they're known for that. You know that? And you know what's good about compost toilets, Paul?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's no running water.
No running water.
No leach field.
Yep.
No odor.
No plumbing.
And they're small, so you can get them in the closet in your camp. You don't have to have an outhouse.
No environmental problems.
Right.
And no mosquitoes.
No mosquitoes.
No, you don't have to go out in the mosquitoes and black flies.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's and they're reasonably priced, and you can get what you want right over there at General Appliance in Brewer, the place to go. If you need an appliance for your camp or your home or whatever, be sure and ask for Andy because he is the greatest magical repair guy they have in the staff.
And you can call, just give Al a call. If you don't want to drive in, you want to find out if he's got to use appliance, you can call him at 989-3714.
Wow, you've got a memory, haven't
you?
Oh,
yeah, sharp attack.
And you know something that's great about them over there?
What's that?
They sell our books over there.
Yes, they do.
You walk right in the door and they got a great big rack staring you right in the face. You can't miss it.
You betcha.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
General Appliance and Brewer. We patronize them and urge you to do so as well. In your book, and all of your books have been illustrated by a fellow named Frank Manzo.
Yes.
He's your publishing partner. Tell us about Frank, would you?
He and I met in the Millinocket school system. I was looking for somebody to illustrate my book and had several say that they would illustrate the first book, but nobody was able to come through with it. And he was working one day, and I saw him scribbling on a piece of paper, drawing. And I said, can you draw? And he said, I've had 4 years of art. And so I said, would you want to illustrate a book for me? And he said, sure. And that started the process rolling where we developed a partnership. And in all our books, we try to create a movie in your mind, especially for the students in the school, so that when they read a passage, they can go to where I'm talking about and recognize what I'm talking about and what I'm trying to display. And he's able to take my words and draw that picture almost perfectly. And he's a very talented, talented man. And he has a lot of different things he does, but we're very fortunate to have him.
Oh, that's a real plus. Another caller standing by, right, Norm?
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Tim and Susan Caverly.
Hi, my name is Don. I'm a Master Maine guide. I'm at not too far from Northeast Kerry, and I got a couple of questions for you guys. But
go ahead.
I'd like to say I guided my client into a successful moose hunt.
Oh, good for you.
And I thought we'd be talking a little more about moose hunting tonight.
Well, what do you want to talk about?
I was real happy that they got a 48-inch spread, 737-pound moose.
Oh, man.
And 3 years ago, I guided her husband, and he got a 52-inch spread. This year, his wife was drawn, and I guided her, and she got a 48-inch spread.
Whoa,
so they're mounting both moose side by side.
But that's
not my whole story. I just like to mention that... I had a friend of mine up here that shot a 900-pound boom moose, and it was a nice moose, and it was in zone 9. And he took it to get it cut up, and it was diseased, and it was ruined.
Oh, so no.
I'm curious about what happens and what makes a moose disease. I know it's not chronic waste disease. It's not... brainworm, because they're still edible.
Well, a tick? Would it be the winter tick?
I don't think so. This was a pretty healthy moose. It only had a 42-inch spread, but still, it was a pretty big-bodied moose. And I was wondering if you had any input on what would cause this moose to be diseased.
Don't know. I know there's it's lungworm, isn't it?
Yeah, there is one, yeah.
I think it's lungworm is an issue, but there are a number of parasites.
Yes.
That can infect moose besides the winter tick issue. But I don't know. We'd have to talk to Lee Cantor, the moose biologist. He might have a thought on that. Yeah. But there are different types of parasites.
You can cook the animal and the meat. It'd probably be okay if you cooked it well.
Not sure. I mean, it depends
on the animal. Not sure, but I think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad you had a good hunt, Don, and appreciate you listening to the show.
Okay, well, thank you for trying to respond to my answer. We'll figure it out one way or another.
Now, I have a question for you. Did you take the animal to the tagging station? There's always biologists there.
We took it to Northeast Kerry at Raymond's. That's where, that's not the moose I shot. He brought his moose to Piston Farm, and then from there down to, I think it was in Dexter where he had it brought to a place that cuts up moose. They're the ones that told him it was completely useless.
Hmm. So when he tagged it, he didn't know it when he was at the tagging station, never had a chance to talk to the biologist about it, found out about it at the meat processor. Wow, that's tough.
Correct.
Yeah. What he ought to do for sure is get a hold of Lee Cantor, the moose guy, and I think Lee would want to know that.
Well, I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
But I understand when you're hunting, as far as I know, if you tag a moose and you bring it and then find out it's diseased, it's too late to
You're out of luck. Yeah.
Tag. Otherwise, he might have been able to replace his tag.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
if
too
he
bad.
Had known before he tagged it.
Yeah. Deeply disappointed, I'm sure. Well,
all
right.
Yeah, but you know what? It happens.
Yeah, you bet.
Luckily, my clients did well. Their moose ended up in southern Maine, and they're having it mounted alongside their husbands that I guided 3 years ago.
All right. Well, we appreciate that, and congratulations on having a good hunt, and we appreciate your call.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much. I enjoy listening to you every time I'm at my camp.
All right. Thank you.
In Northwest West Cove, right close to Northeast Kerry.
All right. Thank you, Don. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
We haven't got much time left. The number to call is 1-800-966-1039.
We have another caller standing by? We don't.
No, we don't.
Okay,
no,
one of the things, how much time we have? A couple of minutes? At the Allagash Waterway is the one one memory you have there that you would share with us that would take about a minute and a half?
Andy the Moose. You know how we just talked about Moose?
Yeah.
He's in a pre-K book that we worked with in the Prescott school system to develop the story. And one summer, there was a moose that weighed out in the middle of the Umzaskas River, where it flows into the Allegash River, where it flows into Umzaskas. And he'd sit there and then go down and get something to eat. And when he went underwater, he'd go completely underwater. And a canoe might paddle by, and all of a sudden he'd pop up, and we'd pop up. He'd have grass in his antlers because he'd pulled up more than he could put in his mouth. And he'd scare the dickens out of the people in the canoe, and we could hear him hollering all the way down the lake. So we worked with a school in Presque Isle to develop that story called Andy's Surprise, and that's been very well received.
All right. That's great. And he's in your book.
He's in our youngest book, pre-K to kindergarten.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
In fact, Andy's such a happy moose, he sings a happy song, and on our website, people can see Susan singing like a moose.
Right? Can you give us a little rendition of that?
No, thank you.
No, don't do that tonight. Well, I want to thank you folks for being here. And again, if somebody wants to find your book on your website, what's the website address again?
Find our book or to set a date for us to visit with a program. It's AllegashTales.com. AllegashTales, TALS.com.
One word, right?
Yes.
All lowercase?
Yes.
AllegashTales, TALS.com. Yes. And again, Bob and I want to thank you for coming down, and we want to commend you for the good things you're doing. It's a great cause to get youngsters back into reading. We all know that. Changing times, electronic gadgetry and all that, and it's good. Not only are you encouraging children to get interested in reading again, which I think is a wonderful calling, you're also encouraging them to get in the outdoors, which we all know is an important part of our lives. And that's great. Good work.
And hopefully we can visit more schools.
Yeah, and I can tell by your schedule that you're not going to have any time to do any duck hunting, Tim.
Not unless I do it in between trips somewhere.
Right. Okay. And again, thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
It was good to get you on the air. I know you didn't want to do it, but you've been a good trooper, and we appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. Next week, Bob and I are going to have as our guest author Dale Wheaton, whose Down East Guide has written a great new book called Backcast. And Greg Burr has agreed to bring him up here, kicking and screaming. So
should be very interesting
show. Glad to have him all here. And we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.